CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Live on a Wednesday morning. Here we are, yet coming at you from the studio in Johannesburg, where Simpiwe is, from my house and from the house of Lesego Mapanga, who is live on the show. You may remember Lesego as being one of the triumvirate who did a brilliant show called Gentleman by Choice not so long ago. Feels like long ago, but it wasn't actually that long ago, here on CliffCentral.com. And Lesego has gone on to do all kinds of amazing things, so we're going to find out what he's been up to in the intervening few years. Nice to see you, man. Are you good?
I'm 100%, man. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, good, man. Good, good, good. How are you this morning, Sipiwe? You finished wearing your slippers, and yesterday you were wearing a hat. Are you doing all these winter things that you can wear now?
Yes, I'm not a fan of winter. No, you know, I don't think winter's the girl that it thinks it is. But we have to still look presentable for the people when you leave the house. So, yeah, you'll see me in a lot of sporties. You know, a dog. Yeah, that's like my winter aesthetic. Sporty and a dog. Well, let's go.
Whatever you got to do to keep warm, right? Abso-bloody-lutely.
Yes.
So, Lesego, let's get up to speed. I mean, where have you been? What have you been doing? The last time I checked in on you, you were a very important banker. You were in banking. You had a whole career going over there. Are you still involved in that financial services world, or have you moved on to something else?
Still involved in it. I don't think I'll ever not be involved in this. I think I'll just expand. Yeah. So it's still in banking. It's an awesome environment. I think the culture plays to my benefit, to be honest. What I have done very interestingly, and I'm going to show you guys my show reel, is I've dabbled a lot more into acting, actually.
Oh, yeah?
So I've definitely moved more into the creative space, because, I mean, banking is cool and all that, but it's really just all spreadsheets.
Yeah,
But isn't that where the money's at? You know, this is how you make it rain on other kids.
Yeah, but the opposite of creativity is accounting, and the opposite of accounting is creativity, whether people like it or not. Now, I know some people in finances and in banking and in, you know, all those kinds of industries on that side of the plate, but I don't know a lot of them who are also creative. It's like two different worlds. So if you are that kind of person, you have to find something completely different to do in your spare time.
Exactly.
However little you have.
Because if you just do accounting, I mean, that's probably one of the slowest and most cruelest death that I can really think of.
Yeah.
Because we're multifaceted as people, right? So if you think about going back into high school or whatever, you did your academics, but you did your sports as well. And you found that balance, or you found the cultural activities.
Yeah.
Or maybe you liked maths, but you also liked English, or whatever the case may be.
Sure.
So the world has tried to make us really linear, which is actually not true. And so you need to just actively try and find your balance. So simply, you're 100% right. Banking is where the money's at. But once you're able to make the money and you kind of like can stabilize yourself, now you really start thinking about your mental well-being and what am I doing with my life? And no, I'm not going to drive into an office every day and do PowerPoint presentations, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's not all doom and gloom, but there's so much more to life, honestly.
Right. And you know what, Lesego? I mean, you said it just now. We are all multifaceted. Now, a lot of people, you know, want to be able to, and I think this is almost like a career thing, or maybe it's a HR thing more than anything else. They want to like be able to put you in a box. And there are very few of us who actually fit very neatly into a box, because so many of us have got different aspects of our personalities, of our interests, of, you know, the kind of person that we like thinking of ourselves as. And you can be, and I think it's quite healthy to be a different person in the office to the person you are at home. You know, within limits, obviously. You don't want to be such a different person that it's almost like you've got split personalities. But if you ask me, am I an extrovert or an introvert, I have a real problem answering that question. I don't know, because I think a part of me, a huge part of me, is like, I love being on my own. I don't really need a lot of people around me. I'm very comfortable to, you know, to sit for days on end without actually having any human interaction, and I'll be absolutely fine with that. But there's another part of me which it just craves and loves and thrives in human company. And, that's pure extrovert, right? So everybody is a little bit of both. And you know, everybody's a little bit creative, even if it's creative in a very bizarre way. And everybody's much more linear in a very specific way. Like you see people who are extremely good at, let's say they're really good at doing simple things like addition, subtraction, division, all that kind of thing. They're like basic arithmetic. And they really have a skill for that, that there's an ability for them to just get to the logical sequences and the equations and the clear calculations in their head. But they also might be able to just sit there and doodle and draw beautiful things while they're busy on the phone with somebody. I don't think anybody's just one thing.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
No.
No, they're really not. And I mean, you see it now, right? You see people that study one thing then become something else.
Yeah.
So people always say, oh, let's say you're an engineer. What are you doing in banking? And I'm like, no, well, those things actually work together well. In fact, the best banker I know that I've ever worked with is a lady by the name of Antoinette Hoffman. She's actually at Vodacom now. And her qualification was in nursing. She was a nurse.
What?
That's wild.
Mind-blowing. She's actually
that's so different.
Okay.
So different.
So mind-blowing. And let me tell you where it actually started to make sense, because we had to sit down with her, because I'm in payments, and she's really the person that taught me payments.
Yeah.
And I was like, how were you able to just move from this one career to another? And, you know, she said she loved caring for people. And you know, all this really, the soft, skills that she had.
Yeah.
And then one day she just took a leap of faith and said, oh, well, let me just go try this banking thing. And she did it. And she was brilliant, phenomenal.
Right.
And what makes her really good in the technical space, such as payments, is that she understands people. And she's able to teach a lot of people about payments and really simplify payments in its complexity. Because, I mean, nursing is not easy, right? You're diagnosing people, you're working with people that have very complicated illnesses, and you're trying to dissect this thing. So she's very good at dissecting.
Right.
She's also very good at interacting with people. That's what makes her a brilliant banker. So go figure.
Yeah. I mean, some people just love people, and some people love things.
Yeah.
Again, you would think that someone couldn't possibly be a banker and a nurse, and yet she thrived in a world of finances. You know, it's weird. I often think, what job would I be doing if I wasn't doing this? And I'm sure we all think that. We all like what is it the opposite end of the circle to what I'm doing? I don't know what it is, but I kind of get the feeling that something like actuarial science is at the opposite of what we do. And actuaries are, you know, I don't know a lot of actuaries. The actuaries that I do know are definitely not boring people. I mean, they're pretty damn smart. They most of them have really good jobs, as in these are high paying, high pressure environment, you know, massively competitive jobs. And yet, I think of what we do, and they would probably, very many of them would consider, you know, speaking in front of people or being able to just talk about stuff or interviewing somebody or, you know, working out some complex discussion or argument on air. And I don't think they could necessarily just do that with their eyes closed. So we all have different skills, but I just hate this idea that we are put in a box and that's where you're going to be for the rest of your life. Like our parents' generation and even our grandparents to a degree, they like would go into a job and that would be the only thing they would do their whole life long. And then, you know, at like 65, which is not even that old, maybe even younger, they would be given a goodbye. That's your retirement. And that would be the end of their lives. And I'm like, that's not, we've realized that's no way to live. And there's so much more to life than that.
Yeah, I mean, a very good example, actually, I'm thinking of it now. Remember Weza?
Yeah, Weza Matamane. We had him on just the other day, yeah.
This other day, I mean, he's a very good example. The guy studied chemical engineering,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just like, that's quite intense. But the rest of the world knows him. But he's
Babes
known.
And
what is he known for? He's known. Exactly.
Babes
he's known. The guy is the most brilliant voiceover artist I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually mind-blowing.
It's amazing.
And why not, right? But sure. I must tell you, G, you still get so much pushback even within normal corporate environments about trying to have multiple streams of income and just being a very different person. And the world is slowly understanding it, but it's still taking quite a bit of time to break out. I mean, I see it every day in the office place, in the office space. People just don't get this thing. They're just like, yeah, let's see how you do acting. Okay, we don't quite get it, but it's fine. We'll give you the time you need to do it, and we'll see you later. And I'm just like, shoot, guys. Fine, as long as you give me the time. It's awesome.
How much acting have you done, and what kind of acting are you getting into? Because there's not a lot of work in this country for actors, and you know, even if there is, if you were just an actor, you'd be struggling because there's no money.
100%. So I'm so grateful because, guys, it is a war zone out there. My word.
Yeah.
Tell us.
So I mean, all the rumors that you hear about, oh my God, acting, you stand in a queue with 200 other people and then you audition for 2 minutes for one role, that's all 100% true. And it is incredibly competitive and you need to outperform, like be at your best at every audition, every casting, etc. So currently I've really just been able to get a lot of commercials. So last year was a pretty good year on the commercial side because again, there wasn't a lot of work. Did about one pilot and I think about five or six commercials. So
Wait, how's that like, you know, like doing commercials? Isn't that also like a nice big paycheck? Like, and then they're like, thank you.
Yeah.
No, so it's relative. If you compare it to banking, no.
Okay.
No. But obviously, if you compare it to being, let's say, unemployed, if I didn't have the banking in my life, then yes, then it would make a significant difference. It's really tough because for every one job you get, you go to about five, six, seven different auditions. So really, that just kind of eats into your budget quite a bit. And it's also just extremely straining because to get into a character. I mean, somebody told me now, okay, cool. You're a radio presenter. You are now Gareth Cliff. Go for it and act it. Oh, my God. I would have lost my mind a long time ago.
Yeah. And soap operas, right? I mean, like that's the only consistent work that a lot of actors in this country get. Now, We mostly laugh about soap opera actors, and I feel bad for them because a lot of them put their work into this. They put their heart and soul into playing these roles, and some of them are very good, right? I mean, you know, some soap opera actors have been playing the same character for so long that they basically bring that character to life, and it's a part of them. But the money's terrible, and at least it's consistent. So for a lot of actors and actresses, that's the thing that they want to do is have a soap opera gig because at least it's regular income if you don't have anything else.
It's just the realities of where we live, G. I mean, it's so tough. I mean, the job market, et cetera. I just started thinking about it. I think every single market or industry that anybody studies, so if you study to become an actor, et cetera, it's really tough in that industry. If you want to play it safe and you want to say, oh, my word, I'm going to go study to become an engineer and you think you'll be rock solid, doesn't work either. I know
engineering is one of the jobs that they say to you, oh, there'll always be work for you. They're one of the careers. There's always going to be work for you in that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you a little academic truth that a lot of people, if you ask them, will tell you. A lot of people that study really technical degrees like engineering or accounting or whatever in the sciences.
Right.
We honestly did it for the security.
Yeah.
And we just like filtered out all the risks. So, like, a lot of people don't become engineers because, oh, my word, I love it. And, like, I love calculus. No one loves calculus. That thing is hard and it hurts physically, right? The amount of pain that you go through. So nobody does it for – well, not nobody, but very few people do those study those type of technical degrees for the love of it. We really just do it so we can get security.
You know how many people
– and build our lives.
You know how many people still go into studying a certain course or go into even a career – just because they want their parents not to worry about them, or because they want to be able to provide for their parents, or they think that, you know, this is the thing that will impress other people. You know, so many people who do well in an academic environment, and they've discovered, by the way, this is quite an obvious thing now, but it wasn't always obvious, that girls in general do better in a school environment than boys. And their marks are on average better than boys because boys really struggle to concentrate for a long time. We are mostly hyperactive. We need to be doing physical things. And this is a generalization because there are obviously girls who are like this too. But girls are better at sitting still, taking instructions, listening. and paying attention in class, where guys are just not good at that stuff. And a lot of guys and girls who do really well at school, because that's the system that they work best in, go on to study medicine, law, engineering. Those are the subjects that those people always take. And accounting, I'll throw accounting in there too. So those four directions are kind of, if you're clever at school and you get good marks, you do medicine, you do law, you do accounting. Those are the things that are open to you. And if you're not doing one of those, oh, well, you must be one of the less smart kids at school, which is nonsense. I mean, we all know that a proper entrepreneur, someone who really has, you know, breakaway ideas and comes up with brilliant ways of changing the world through an invention or through creating a product or a service that people didn't have before. A lot of those people have no qualifications whatsoever. They would never be able to thrive in an academic situation. In fact, they can often be very disruptive in those situations. And we want everybody to fit, again, going back to this, everyone has fit the mold.
Yeah.
Because that mold was built like by the school system 100 years ago. And this is the way that we measure whether people are smart or dumb. And it's just crazy. It's such a one-dimensional way of looking at the world. Here's Karen or Karen. She says, Gareth, I used to be a software analysis designer. And I used to do software analysis, design, and development. I've been a yoga teacher for the last 7 years, and I love it.
Oh, wow.
That's a huge change. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool. And, you know, again, if you said to your parents or your friends, oh, I'm going to go and become a yoga teacher, they'd go, what the fuck? They'd go, what the fuck is wrong with you, you know?
What are you doing?
I said, like, what are you?
Are you okay?
They're like, what,
is that a job?
Have you lost your mind? Yeah. So.
They'll be like, with whose money? We're going to study that. With whose money? We're not funding that thing.
Right. Right.
It's exactly. A hobby. Just, you do it on weekends. It's not a job.
No, spot on. Cheryl says, I have to brag. My daughter has just been awarded the international law degree from a well-known law firm. I'm a very proud mom. Oh, that's awesome. Well done to you. Easy Picking says, calculus is interesting and the reason why we can map anything on any plane. Yes. I mean, listen, you know, I remember doing some of that stuff, but I only really clicked, and I've mentioned this before on the show, I only really clicked in maths in the final year of school. Up to then, I hated maths. I was shitty at it. I never really knew what was going on. I was lost. I was like on a little boat out at sea, and I had no idea how to make sense of all these things. Especially, I mean, geometry confused me. Trigonometry confused me. Algebra confused me. I was just, I was like, oh, well, I'm just bad at this. And then I remember somewhere in the middle of matric, I sat down and I really worked hard at this. I decided I'm gonna figure this out. I'm not an idiot, and I'm gonna put away all my preconceived ideas of this. And I just sat there for, I don't know, a couple of weeks, and I put my heart and soul into this. I'm like, I'm gonna work this shit out, and I'm gonna figure out whether I can do this or not. And it suddenly all started to fall into place, just because if I don't put an effort into things, and I don't think I'm unique. I think a lot of people are like this. We only love the stuff that we think we're good at. And if you think you're not good at something, you just don't love it, and then you never put any effort in, so you never become good at it. But if you get rid of that and you decide, I actually want to do this, I really care about this, you open the doors. And I remember just suddenly it all became crystal clear, and I suddenly got really good at algebra, geometry, trigonometry, and I looked forward to those questions. I looked forward to those exams. I used to do, in my spare time, I would do these things. And I thought, wow, I'm into this. I mean, it only lasted half a year, but my marks went from like, you know, like 53% to 70-something, just because I cared enough about it. It shows you how much you put an effort into something, you'll figure it out very quickly.
But can I also add to, like, it's how teachers also explain, because I noticed when it came to maths is that, like, grade 10, grade 11, I was like, oh, I understand. Oh, this is easy. It's because the teachers I got explained it to a point where I felt like, oh, okay, I can understand this. And then I got to matric, and then the teacher I got, he was just too theoretical about it. I was like, wait, what do you mean? How do I apply this? Like, how do I put this in everyday situation? And then the minute I understood, oh, this is how you actually play it out in real life,
yeah,
then I could be like, okay, maths is actually cool. Like, accounting is not that bad. Like, credit, debit, now I understand what you mean. When it starts playing out in real life, and I think that's one of the things that also plays a role in people liking certain things and not liking certain subjects, because it's like, I don't understand this. Like, it doesn't make sense.
And
people are like, I'll never use this.
And you
like,
that, that's
you use it every day.
This is never going to be useful to me, right? That kind of thing.
Like, and the minute you think like that, the minute you're like, I don't need this, it doesn't make sense, I'll never use it a day in my life. And then someone breaks it down and is like, you see the flooring in your house?
Yeah.
Cheap, that's maths.
Correct. Correct. And suddenly you have to make something with your hands and you're like, oh, I'm measuring and I'm dividing and I'm changing and I'm figuring out the dimensions of this space or whatever.
Yes, and you're like, oh, you go that's the degrees. This is what you mean. Okay.
You go to the hardware store because now you need to, you know, redo your shower floor. And you're like, oh, shit, I got to figure out the area. You're like doing calculations and shit. And you're like, oh, the last time I did this was matric. But you needed it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. So Lesejo's doing finance and acting. We figured that out and had a very roundabout conversation about that this morning. We've got lots of other stuff to talk about. We'll get to some of the news headlines in just a moment or two. But why don't you also tell us what else is going on with you? Because we've checked in with your other two cohorts. You spoke earlier about Weza and some Piwe, and we spoke to both of them earlier this year, maybe. Even last year. You were the one that we needed to catch up with the most. Last time I saw you were wearing a suit. You were sitting in very important meetings. Is that the kind of thing that you do every day? Do you have to get dressed up? Are you going into the office or are you working from home?
I've literally been working from home ever since COVID started. So I haven't even gone back to the office. I try to be authentic, right? So the background that you see right now is the background that everybody sees.
Right.
I couldn't be bothered anymore. I'm like, I'm in the kitchen, guys. I'm making coffee. That's what it is.
But at least doing this from the kitchen.
You're not even hiding it.
Doing it from the kitchen is a smart move because then you can always just, you can just quickly switch the camera off, grab something from the fridge or switch on the kettle. I mean, I can see all of the stuff going on in the background in your kitchen. It's quite convenient. I reckon working in the kitchen is very smart.
No, it's 100%. Plus, you also get like claustrophobic, right? If any like closed room. So I like to work around everywhere.
But Simpiwe says it must be nice. It actually can be very frustrating to be working from home for this long. You know, luckily we get to go into the office, and Simpiwe has pretty much been going into the office for the whole of lockdown. And it's good to separate work and home. Because sometimes it's very, very hard to not sit there and answer emails if you're the kind of person who over delivers. But sometimes if you're the kind of person, you can get very lazy very quickly, you know. You go, oh well, I can schedule this meeting for here and this one for here. I'll have a nap in between. That's not good. You'd never be able to do. You would never be able to do that in the office.
No. Let me just tell you a fun fact actually. You guys must send Simpiwe a message. It's actually his birthday today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's been peer pressure, so she's been taking it. So I'm actually
seeing
him later.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are all still friends. It's really nice that you all speak to each other. And just to clear up for people who don't know what we're talking about, this Simpiwe who we've got in the studio here, this is Simpiwe Mtetwa. This is our Simpiwe who's been working with Cliff Central for a while. We're talking about Lesejo's friend and former co-presenter on Cliff Central, Simpiwe Petros, who is also started off as an engineer, and he's working in a very different world at the moment.
100%. I mean, he's a math and science teacher now.
Right.
And he is over the moon. I mean, Simpiwe has worked for Deloitte as a management consultant.
Yes.
He's worked for Transnet as an engineer, and he just said, this is not for me, this environment.
Wasn't he also doing something for Sasol for a while?
For a bit. And then he just like figured out that, you know, the environment was not for him. And he wanted an environment that was more collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, you know, Simpiwe was very heart-centered, right? Yeah, we're similar in that sense. And then we're very heart-centered. And he gets really great pleasure in actually taking kids who hated math and science. And he literally sits down with them and says, listen, this thing is not difficult. It's time-consuming.
Right.
There's a difference.
He just
breaks it down.
So we've come full circle on his birthday. We're talking about him. I hope he's listening. But there's a guy who's actually changing it for people.
Yeah, 100%. And he's making the world a better place.
That's amazing.
on my side, I can tell you one thing. Working from home, I'm the same as you. I like to stay at home for a couple of days at a time and then go out into the world and interact with people.
Yeah.
But once you're at home for a long time, cabin fever is what you get quite a lot of.
It's a big problem.
And I can confidently say now that I fully understand anxiety and I understand anxiety and depression. Because when you're always working from home, one, you get burnt out, right?
Yeah.
Two, you're just overworked because there's no more working hours now. You start from 6 and you end at like 10. Every time there's an email, you just get a bit of anxiety. You're like, what did I miss? What am I missing?
Right.
What's happening? And you work, and the level of burnout is insane.
Well, I think a lot of bosses and workers don't know where to draw the line. At least when you used to, when you'd leave the office before. And I mean, a lot of this has to do with this always connected thing, you know, where you've always got to be available. Yeah. Your phone is always on. Your email, you must always answer. I do not respond to email on my phone, and I never have. It's been a rule of mine from the beginning, and it's part of what keeps me sane, because we do tend to throw around this depression and anxiety shit all the time, like where everyone is a little bit anxious or depressed or whatever. And there's part of that that's true. But I think we've lost the ability to manage our time in our lives. I mean, there are some jobs where you have to be on call all the time, right? There's some very, very important and emergency and time-related jobs where you just don't really get to manage your time, because it's not really your own. Your job, part of being your job, is being available all the time. And even those people at some point need to draw the line when they go on holiday or whatever, because they will burn out. But there's some businesses and some jobs, man, they expect, they want to smash every little drop of blood out of you, huh?
Dude, there have been, I mean, I've experienced some really toxic environments and maybe not environments, but actually bosses. We keep on saying environment, but it's not true. It's just like the one person that you report to. It's just bosses who think that your world revolves around work, and it doesn't. And very unsympathetic people in the world, and it's just it's a bit mind blowing. So, if you have a really good boss and you enjoy going to work, huge privilege. Count your lucky stars, because I've learned that it's not the same for everyone. And I'm a very passionate person. You know, when I work on a project, I put my all in. But some environment, they just want you to put it in and just drag you out, and it's you slowly start to go down here.
And especially if you're young and you're starting off in your first job, you think, well, this is how it is. This is how people – it's just horrible. You have to work your fingers to the bone. People are not going to give you time off. Nobody cares whether you're happy or not in your job.
Yeah.
If you have a horrible first boss, that's how you're going to think all work is. And your life's going to be pretty damn horrible from there on. I mean, it may teach you to be one of those one of those people who's just – you can call him anytime. He'll do anything. And you may end up being more valuable in the job market, but you won't necessarily be happy, right?
No, not a chance. And in fact, don't be that person. Have very clear boundaries. Don't always be reliable. I mean, this is actually quite not reliable, but too reliable to be there all the time. And this sounds counterintuitive, but you need to be selfish. You need to be selfish to yourself. And it's not something that we've always been taught intrinsically, right?
That is so true. And it's so true.
Your cut must run forever.
And it's also about being selfish sometimes in a relationship. I see so many people, and they give. And very often, it's not always the case, but very often, the woman in the relationship, in a normal relationship, the woman is the one who's giving a lot, and the guy is the one who, yeah, he goes out and earns the money, but the woman is giving of her time and of her emotional support and all the rest of it. And then she has to also sometimes, if there are children, look after the children and all of that stuff. And women are programmed to be nurturing generally. Again, this is a stereotype, but generally they're a lot more nurturing than men. And they get into a position where they just get abused, because they're giving. They never take. And if you're not a little bit selfish, because people think of selfishness as a bad thing, but if you don't look after yourself first and foremost, what are you going to have to give someone else? You've got to keep a little bit for you. You have to.
Yeah. No, you have to, because, I mean, you are your number one biggest priority, right?
Uh-huh.
You are your number one biggest priority. And I think especially in relationships, because the dynamics are always so fluid, it's very difficult to try and maintain them and have a bit of a schedule because it doesn't always work. But it's okay sometimes to just say, no, you don't want to go out for dinner. It's actually okay to say sometimes I can't afford to go on a trip, especially now. Oh, my word. Listen, socials are almost a cancel. Oh, guys. Not everybody goes on holiday every month, guys. It doesn't happen. Not everybody goes out for dinner every week. It doesn't happen.
I know. And you know, also, like, we've got to learn, no matter how old you are, no matter how rich or poor you are, we all have to learn to just be able to say, no, I can't do this. I can't afford this. Or I don't feel like I should be doing this right now. I mean, I know people who are going on holiday often, right? And I don't know how they can be doing that in a country where so many people are struggling. And also in a business where maybe once people realize they don't need you as much because you're away all the time, you're kind of talking yourself out of a job. If you're away all the time and you take a lot of leave, and people are eventually going to go, I don't know if we need that guy anymore. he's hardly around. I think we could do without him. Let's stop paying him. Anyway.
I mean, I'm going to go to the other end of the spectrum. I don't know if you guys have been watching Ozark.
Mm-mm.
So,
no.
Oh, you have to watch it. It's so brilliant. It's just basically about this
guy. Like season two, season three, somewhere it's like deep within now.
They're on season four, but it is brilliant. And it's basically just about a guy who's an accountant that becomes a drug lord, basically. And from watching that, when I see people on holiday all the time.
But hang on, this is a theme here, because wasn't Breaking Bad about a teacher who becomes a drug maker? I mean, this is...
Yes.
So there's a lot of drugs that are suddenly the alternative moral career
the
for all these people. Wow.
Korea, just sell drugs. That's the moral of the story.
When I see people going on holiday all the time, I'm just thinking, there's some illicit funds going on here, because this does not make sense whatsoever. But I can tell you one thing that is interesting, though, G, and Superior. Ever since working from home, one thing I have been able to do is connect with Home, which is Benoni.
Oh, yeah?
And I remember leaving Benoni and saying to myself, oh, I'm never coming back to this place. I'm so done with this corner of the world.
Who hurt you? Like, what happened?
Leave me alone. And then I went back home in December. It's the first time in 10 years I spent a full December at home. And I realized, like, it clicked. I was like, oh, this is what people love about Benoni all the time. You know, we always make fun of people from Benoni.
Yeah.
Like, they never leave.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, this is why they never leave. It's literally a utopia.
There's no place like home.
All right. Is that just because you're surrounded by people you know and it's an environment that you really feel comfortable in? Because let's face it. I mean, Benoni is not like a tourist destination. No one's lining up to go there for a holiday.
Don't say that.
Listen, I was the number one person who, with all my mates, I'd go back home and visit for like 2 days. And I'd be like, why are you guys still here? Like, go out into the world and see the world and experience different things.
Yeah.
Cause, and I can say this because, I mean, I'm a proud Benonian, but a lot of people from Benoni, you know, once they grew up in Benoni, they just never leave. And I'm like, why do you feel so stuck? And I came back and I just realized it's actually a utopia. And it is because of that. It's because you know everyone and you know all your mates and you feel safe. And
right. We need
and nothing changes.
We need a lot of people think they'll be happy if they go out and explore the world, but maybe your happiness is actually going back to your roots.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
You know, some people
there's
think,
a quote that I recently learned.
Yeah.
And it said sometimes the best thing you can do for someone is leave them where they are. Like this whole thing of wanting to like get someone to change and grow with you and see the world for what it is. No. Sometimes the best thing you can do is just leave them where they are.
Where they are.
Well,
and they flourish.
Dogozo says, I literally felt the same way about KZN until I came back during lockdown. It's lovely out here. Yeah. And even, I mean, with the floods and the riots last year and everything else, I mean, if that's your home, that's your home. That's where you want to be. And a joking atheist says, Gareth, maybe you should rephrase that. Selfishness is a little bit different from self-interest. I would think selfishness is self-interest, but at the expense of others around you. That's probably a good definition.
I think that's
about right.
That is awesome.
Okay, a couple of headlines first. We've got to look and talk about Eskom. I mean, you studied engineering. You must be sick of hearing this stuff. So Eskom is in an increasingly desperate state. This is from the Daily Friend this morning. There's little hope that South Africa will have a secure and reliable electricity supply for years. Yet there is seemingly little urgency from the government for fixing what is a major and binding constraint on the problem. Eskom has lost skills, it's highly indebted, the bulk of its coal-fired plants will need to be scrapped within the next decade or so, and it is not making plans for the future. There's no one thinking long-term at Eskom. The overriding problem is that it is not operating in a favorable environment. At every turn, the dead hand of government puts it under pressure when Eskom is deciding how it should do business, whom it should employ, and from whom it should buy. The government is also delaying regulatory approval for private renewable projects that will feed into the grid. So I think a lot of people don't realize how bad the situation is with Eskom. And as I said just a second ago, no one's really planning for 10, 20 years in advance. We've got these aging power stations that require massive, massive spending on maintenance. That decreases the amount that they could spend on new capital projects. And I don't know if you heard in the news just 2-3 weeks ago, there were people talking about how there are actually some of the people in the employ of Eskom who go in and throw stuff into the power machines to like jam them up and screw them up and break them because they have friends and family who have the contracts to fix those things. So there's actually wanton destruction. There's like someone who's gone in with the intention to destroy because they know the maintenance contract is going to make someone, or they're being paid to do it, who knows. This is something that they discovered at some of these plants. It's really bad.
So the one thing that I do know is because I've got a couple of mates that actually work for Eskom, a couple of engineers that work for Eskom.
Oh, yeah.
And they will tell you that, like, if you have a piece of job that you can do during the workday, let's say for 4 hours, they will stretch that out to, like, from 4 to, like, 10 hours because they get paid overtime as engineers. And sometimes the overtime they'll get paid will almost match their actual salary. So if you're getting paid like 20,000 rand as an engineer, normal day to day, and if you're working like another 8 hours on your overtime per month, you just get like 40,000 rand. Oh my God. And I know that's happening from my mates. I don't know, guys. It's the Eskom one.
And we can get angry with those guys who are getting the overtime, but the fact is, like, the system is not built to be efficient. And we're allowing this to happen because the people who are in charge and making the decisions aren't thinking about efficiency. They're thinking about sheltered employment. They're thinking about contracts with suppliers. They're thinking about tenders. They're thinking about the stakeholders, which are usually just the government. What's the point? Nothing's going to work that way. Listen to this. Two guys, Ravinder Singh, who's 50, and his son Andrew, who's 26, are directors of a Durban-based call center sub-user. They were nabbed on Wednesday last week in Joburg by police. The duo handed themselves in at the Hawks Serious Commercial Crime Investigation Court and were subsequently charged with fraud. On the same day, they appeared in the Palm Ridge Specialized Commercial Crimes Court and were granted 30,000 rands bail. So what did they do? Well, they were linked through a forensic investigation that was carried out by banks. This is your area of expertise again, Nesejo, which discovered that these guys had undue debit orders through the suspect's call center companies. The accused allegedly created fraudulent bank payment systems to collect debit orders for call centers, which resulted in unauthorized debit orders for millions of people. Numerous clients from several banks countrywide reportedly lost their hard-earned cash through a 99 rand debit order withdrawn fraudulently between November of 2018 and February 2019. So they're going to go after them. But apparently the total here is a huge amount of money, some 18 million rand that was taken in unauthorized debit orders. You got to check. You know, people don't do this because we're always so busy. But Lesejo, you have to go through your bank statement and anything that looks suspicious, find out what it is. Get hold of your bank, say, what is this? Where does it come from? And cancel it if it's not you.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, the bank's payment system is, or the South African's bank's payment system is very sophisticated. Mm-hmm. So I can understand how they're able to just like pick those up and get them. But from a consumer perspective, right? I mean, I work in a bank, but I'm a human before my banker. I can say even I don't go and really scrutinize every month by month because, and it's just a discipline that I just really need to get into the habit of. But I can understand why that would be possible. I mean, I'm probably one of the clients. I don't know. No. And you go back the next 3 months and just like underline just 99 rand. Where?
Apparently, and Congo Chris says here it's 99 rand so that the victim doesn't get an alert. Because if it's over 100 rand, you might get an alert on SMS. That's an interesting point. So if you know, if it's less than 100, it slips under the system and you don't really know.
Yeah, under the threshold.
No, but don't people have like their banking apps on their phone so you get a notification of anything? Like I know with all my debit orders, when the 25th comes and they hit, I see that. Like I see the money go. Yeah. Like it's like, okay, that's the car, that's the insurance, that's this, that's it. Oh, now there's a... Okay, you know, so don't you guys know, maybe?
No, because those get annoying for me. I don't know about you, G.
Yeah.
Me, get annoying. Every time you swipe, 2 rand, it's like...
Yeah, you know what? I set my limit at like 100 rand as well, so that if it's anything less than that, it doesn't come up. But I do go through my statements, not every month. I'll do it every couple of months. And then if there's something suspicious, I'll just say, hey, what's this for? And they can usually tell you.
Yeah.
But then
I think the reason why I don't do it every month, because I do it like every 3 months, is I don't like looking at how much I spend. Like it's like
it's horrible.
Like, here's the income, and then you see every single little dime, and you're like, okay, there was KFC 2 weeks in a row. Okay, we need to stop that now. And you're like, oh no, oh shit, you spent 25 rand. Where?
Or you see something that's coming off as a debit order every month, and you're like, oh, do I really need that? Can't remember why you got it, but then you think, oh well, actually I really like having that, you know, whether it's a gym membership or if it's a, I don't know, some kind of subscription that you've added to your list of things. Sometimes you need that stuff.
Yeah.
The one I hate the most for me is just medical aid. So I'm really just looking at medical aid payments. So I'm just like,
an insurance.
But I mean, I haven't even. And sure, so I'm like, you guys are a scam anyway.
Yeah.
Comprehensive healthcare.
Exactly.
I still have to go buy my asthma pump. I don't even know what I'm paying for. That one annoys me the most. And also, when you get your salary, I think the salary should just be a WhatsApp that just says same. Yeah. But I think it doesn't change, right?
Right.
It's just same. Yeah.
All right. So here's another story. This is not going to make you feel too good this morning, but you need to know about it. This comes from News24. Following flood damage to the railways in KwaZulu-Natal, transporting jet fuel from Durban to OR Tambo will likely be 100% restored only by the end of October. So the airport...
Why so?
Yeah. Because the railways are broken. So how else do you transport huge amounts of liquid aviation gas to the airport? The airport's currently suffering a shortage of fuel supplies. Currently, there are about 3.5 days' supply. A supply of 5 or more days is usually regarded as comfortable, AXA CEO Mpumi Mbofu said during a briefing on Monday afternoon. Due to a shortage of jet fuel supplies, two airlines have temporarily cancelled flights. One international airline cancelled operations from 24 April to 1st of May. A total of 14 flights and 3,150 passengers were impacted by that. Another airline cancelled its flight on the 24th of April, only impacting about 100 passengers. While overall stock levels are stable at OR Tambo, certain suppliers impacted by a declared force majeure, which means that's, you know, it's obviously as a result of the flood, are still unable to acquire the quantities of jet fuel that they require. So just bear this in mind. It's not great, but if you are going to be booking a flight, it's not guaranteed that you're going to be able to get on that flight until at least October when they can restore all the aviation fuel problems to 100%. It's not great. There's another reason to be a little bit pissed off this morning, but it's nobody's fault. I mean, you know, nobody goes, oh, well, let's send a flood to KZN. That's what we want. And these things have created massive, massive problems in supply chain.
Doesn't that mean that average plane tickets will increase, though, as well?
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably going to happen. This is a sad story. We talk about debit orders. The singer Zahara, who stands to lose her home, has humbly asked her fans to donate money to her. This takes a massive, imagine how, you know, your pride takes a massive backseat to this. But this poor woman, Zahara, who, you know, I still listen to her famous song, which one? Loliwe. Which is on my playlist. Mm-hmm. And I remember when she came out with that song, everybody's like, this woman is incredible and we love her and she's the next big thing. but she stands to have her Roodepoort townhouse auctioned on Saturday as a result of defaulting on her monthly installments of 17,665 rand. That's a lot of money a month. It's that's a big installment. The entertainment industry in South Africa has been rocked by lockdown. Obviously, that started in 2020. The country was declared to be under national state of disaster. You see, these are the things that nobody talks about, but we are aware in the back of our minds, like the entertainment industry took a massive smack. And according to the publication, that's City Press, Zahara has been struggling to pay a 1.9 million rand loan for a Roodepoort home, and Nedbank was reportedly set to auction off her home to the highest bidder. Horrible story. Imagine having to do that. So she's basically said, if you can help, please, you know. And she's actually given out her private cell phone number and said, if anybody can help, I will tell you where to send donations. Apparently, she also said, I've got designer clothes, some that I've only worn once. I've started to approach people who own clothing stores to buy these things. When you go to visit Zahara, according to a friend, you don't feel like a visitor. You feel like you belong there. She deserves all the help she can get. So lots of people being nice about her. And you know what? Maybe there's a guardian angel who come to her rescue, but I do feel sorry for her. This is not a situation that anybody wants to be in. And of course, there are lots of not famous people who are also struggling, who can't necessarily ask for fans to give donations. But you think about entertainers. Here's a real life story. We've heard about so many people in the entertainment business who just commit suicide because they can't handle the financial pressures. So at least she's been, you know, sensible enough. She swallowed her pride and she's decided she's going to ask for help.
Yeah. It's
tough, eh? That's horrible.
That's rough.
That's really horrible.
Yeah. There was a lady on Twitter, I think she was a Sangoma, and she also did like a thread recently about how she's losing everything, her house, her car. The only difference here, she didn't ask for anything. She was just like, I know I'm going to bounce back, but this is what's going on in my life, so bear with me. And then she was telling us that she's basically losing everything. And people were just like, wow, like, you know, life is really happening for people. And as much as we're seeing everyone on vacations, it's like the other side of the coin is people are going through it. Like, they're not able to just keep to the day-to-day as they used to before.
Well,
and that's the sad part.
I mean, here are two points of view from two different people in the comments. So first of all, Joking Atheist says, should banks, maybe there's a question for you, Lisego, should banks repossess homes from people who've paid off the greater part of the loan but have found themselves unable to keep up with current payments? I don't know. What do you think of that?
Question mark.
Okay, and then Sanella says, no, Gareth, this poor woman... Nah, bro. Zahara used to stunt on people and brag about how much money she has. In an interview she did on MacG, she lied and said she bought the house in cash. No donation here. See, again, if that's what she said, maybe people won't be so sympathetic. You know, there are a lot of people in entertainment who they talk a big game, like, oh, I bought this cash. I've got so much money. And then when that isn't the case, they come out looking like liars and fools. Maybe that's also something to consider.
But I would say, though, I think a point that covers both, I think for me is, and I mean, it sounds so corny, but it's so true. I think we could all learn just to be kinder to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little kinder to each
other. Spot on, man. Spot on.
A very young Lesotho, when I started working, I thought I owned the world, right?
Right.
And then you start to realize that, you know, the more mature that, no, life is actually pretty tough and it's really hard. So I do feel for Zahara. I don't know her personally, obviously. I haven't been following her very closely. But we have ups and downs. And yes, it's not nice to be to brag or anything like that. But
sure.
Just be a bit kinder, a bit merciful to everyone. On the banks, why in the Fjorkas, we have compliance for a reason. Eh? So I'm leaving that as a question mark.
Absolutely, yeah.
Leave it right there. Again, because, and why? Because I'm really trying to keep my job. I'm really trying to hold it.
No,
wait,
dude.
I
don't
want to
say anything out of turn, yeah?
And I think it's something that someone like once said to me is that, you own the car or you own the house, right? Like, even though it's a monthly installment, the only thing the bank cares about is the money. Like, even if you're like, okay, here's the car, if it doesn't equate to how much you owe, they're just like, well, we still want the money back. Is that is that how it usually works? Is that like a good way to look at it? To be like, as long as if I have the cash, then it's still mine.
I mean, I prefer to think of it that way, because, you know, some people say, you know, when you have a car, you have a home, but you're still paying off the bank fees. They're like, well, technically the bank actually owns it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like looking at things that way, because you're the one that's using it. If it's your home, it's your special place. It's, you know, if it's a car, it's, again, your special place to go from A to B. But again, when you take that loan, you're signing a contract with the bank, right? And with all contracts, you try to meet your end of the bargain. So I like to keep it, you know, I'd prefer to see it that way, actually, Simpio, is that as long as you you're shaking hands with the bank and you made a promise, as long as you can keep to that promise, then A-OK. And if you can't keep to that promise, then, you know, talk to your banker, you know, or go to the bank and talk to them. You'll find they're a lot more lenient than what people might perceive them to be.
They, if you leave them in the dark, then when the payment doesn't come through, they're going to do what they have to do, because they suddenly think, oh, well, this person is defaulting because they don't care. But if you go and talk to them, chances are they'll be able to help you figure out some kind of a plan.
100%.
People are sometimes too afraid to just acknowledge and deal with a problem, so they let it fester in the background. And you know what? If you're the bank, you're going to say, oh, well, 3 months have gone by. This person hasn't made a payment. We've got to get our money now. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's how it works. And there are lots of people here talking about, you know, loans and repaying them. And you've got to realize, when you sign a contract like that with a financial institution, you are taking that responsibility on. You can't suddenly default from it and then they're the bad guy. You know, in America at the moment, they're talking about getting rid of student debt. And you can't just get rid of debt. You can't just write off, you know, millions of dollars in student debt just because there are a lot of people who owe money for university educations that sometimes worked out for them, sometimes didn't. If you signed up for that deal, you can't expect the taxpayer to come in and rescue you. That means those people who didn't go to university are suddenly subsidizing the people who did. Which is perverse, because the people who did go to university are usually more privileged than the people who didn't. So how can you expect those people to now pay for your studies? It's crazy, right?
It gets complex very quick, because now it becomes socioeconomics, right? It's not just economics, but socioeconomics.
Yeah.
And it affects everybody everywhere. And I mean, one way or another, we're all like linked into this financial, socioeconomics, banking system. So we also need to be very prudent about it. There's also why banks, out of most industries, are probably the most regulated industry.
Mm-hmm. Very regulated.
Because, again,
it's one of the things,
very regulated.
One of the things that saved us in 2008 from the global financial crisis was the fact that our banks actually had huge compliance, and there were all kinds of checks and balances. I mean, don't get me wrong. I still look at the major banks in this country and think, they've got a bit of a chokehold on things in some ways. But they are forced to comply with many regulatory frameworks, and there are plenty of things that you have to do in order to be a licensed financial institution in South Africa, which in any other part of the world you might not have to have so many rules.
100%. And very interestingly, guys, I don't want to deviate, but this is one of the realities of working from home.
Mm-hmm.
The sun is like directly in my ass. Can you see it?
Yeah,
we can see you.
Suddenly you're glowing, Lesefo.
Where's my selfie?
It's golden hour in Lesejo's house.
Let me go close the curtain like for 2 seconds, please.
Yeah, go for it. No, go for it. Go and sort out the curtain. So we've got two guests joining us a little later on. This could be really, really exciting. So Space Hero, have you ever heard of Space Hero?
No.
All right, so let me tell you about this. Space Hero is the world's first ever global competition series where contestants will compete for a $55 million 10-day trip to space, which is the biggest it's the biggest prize ever awarded on TV. So I thought when I first read this, this is a bullshit thing. There's no way. So it's a once-in-a-lifetime journey. It'll be open to anyone over 18 who can speak English. It is a biannual competition. Listen to this. It provides for people from all walks of life the chance to compete and select one of their peers for a mission to space. This is absolutely amazing. For those people who crave adventure, who feel like they want to get out there and explore the universe. And this could be your first step in that direction, right? So they're making a TV show out of it, which is currently in pre-production. It's a reality TV format. They've got 24 contestants who are competing for a grand prize of a ticket aboard a spaceship bound for the International Space Station. Those 24 contestants from all over the world will live in a space village here on Earth during the filming of the show, and they plan to feature space technologies developed by dozens of nations with space agencies. And they're going to test the participants' physical and mental strength in preparation for space flight. Because as you know, you have to be in unbelievable condition to be able to go into space, because it's tough on the body, it's tough on the mind.
Yeah.
And it could be the most amazing prize. So we're going to speak to two people who are going to explain to us just how this works and whether or not it's for real. Because if you ask me, like, I heard this story and Dori told me about it when she was putting the show together. I said to her, nah, this sounds like a scam. Because, you know, there are all these things where we could give you a house and a car worth X million rand. This is amazing. It's a very expensive prize. There are only a few people in the world. You could probably fit them on one A4 page, all the names of the people who've actually been into space. And we know all these billionaires who did it last year and the year before, right? Elon Musk did it, and Jeff Bezos did it. And we know that Richard Branson went up into the upper atmosphere. So there are very few people in the world who get to do this stuff. And if this is a real prize, and we'll find out if it is, it could be something you're really interested in. And they're taking people from all over the world. So it might be something you want to join in on and try. Who knows? You might just win it.
Would you guys go to space?
No.
If you had the opportunity?
Not for me.
Thank you.
I have no desire, but I'll tell you what, there are lots of people who would. I know 20 people just off the top of my head who would love to do this. They would be jumping at the chance to go to space. But me? No, you can skip me on this one.
I would say the PR to going to space is starting to look good. I mean, all these billionaires are making it look like it's the new it thing. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like, you also want to be that girl who's like, oh, yeah, space. Oh, I've been there. What do you mean? I was just there the other day. Like, you know, it just sounds like a nice flex.
Well, joking atheist says, I would love to go to space. So I guess it's time to pull out the pot. Yeah, listen. Space is very tough on the mind, says Parallel Parking, because once you get up there, you discover that we're not actually, and then it runs out of words. Alone, maybe? I don't know. I'd go to space when I have nothing left to do on this world. It'll be the last thing in my list, says lovely Lady Lee.
I'm with her there, actually. I'm with her.
Yeah, I'm
just saying the PR in space is looking quite nice, guys. Yeah,
people will
Before
know.
You know what it's going
to
be.
People will
chat.
Know your name. And also, I'd be curious to watch this show and see what kind of training and you know, orientation and skills and things they have to develop before you can go to space. I think that would be quite cool. Somebody says here that you can do space on Earth. Mike Tyson does it all the time. It's called 20 grams of mushrooms. Oh, wow.
You don't want to be seeing things now.
Yeah.
That's the only issue.
Yonder says, I would love to go to space any chance I get. It's been a dream of mine. You see, so there are people who really do want to go. That's amazing. Yeah. All right. Very, very good. We need to also, according to Hugo, this is a very good reminder. We need to like and subscribe. The show is not even advertised today by YouTube, and I had to search for it. Hugo, that's a good reminder. Please, everybody, do the like and subscribe thing, because otherwise, you know, the algorithms don't kick us to the top, and that makes it a waste of time. So let's get on with it and do this. Please, 5 seconds of your time. Like and subscribe. Make sure everybody else you know does it too. And if you watch us live in the mornings, even more reason to do so. If you listen to the podcast, then this is just an annoyance for you. But please, go ahead. And also, leave a nice review if you do those on the various podcast apps, because that also helps to push us to the top. And we need to keep on top of these things. Otherwise, how am I going to afford to go to space? How are we going to afford to send Simpiwe to space? Right? Let's do it. Absolutely.
I need to come back and tell you all about it.
Look, correct. Correct. When we come back, speaking of coming back, it's 7 o'clock now. We will have a whole lot more, including trips to space. And Lesego Mapanga is our guest host this morning. Simpiwe Mtetwa, it's me, you, and everybody else. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com.